Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It's been kind of a rough day in the world of Karen Reed for Karen Reed. Interesting testimony today. Very powerful testimony today in the trial of Karen Reed. We had, he's an ARCA expert, correct? That's...
I believe so, yeah.
Let's get you back now to court.
I just want to get his accident reconstructionist, Judson Welcher. Judson Welcher, at your service. He was pretty good, and we're going to watch some clips of it here in just a few moments. Basically, he walked through so many questions that people had with pretty much undisputable scientific certainty. He did all his own downloads. He did all his own research. He did all his own work with technology that I don't even know existed, with the way that he was able to like laser map out all of these scenes where basically you could get down to saying, okay, where is the keyhole in the door over here? I know there's probably not a keyhole anymore, but let's say there is, to the ashtray or the cigarette lighter. You can mm-hmm. you can measure that within the programs and because of the mapping that they've did down to millimeters, like with an accuracy of maybe what, like 2 to 3 millimeters off, I think he said. So having all of that data, then being able to put it into a system in conjunction with the vehicle data of everything from acceleration to deceleration to braking to striking something to you name it, it's all there. And he very neatly put the pieces of the puzzle together today, all the way down to saying his opinion is that the vehicle struck John O'Keefe. And then objection. And then there was a sidebar. And I don't know what happens after that, quite honestly, because we started recording on the air. So we'll watch that part together. But first, we're going to begin with a little bit of the testimony from the morning with Judson. And this is him getting into some of the data of the vehicle of Karen Reed's Lexus at the time of impact and such. So let's jump into this testimony.
Was what you see is accelerator opening ratio, which is basically, you can think of it as how much you're stepping on the gas pedal. And so if it exceeds, in this case, 30% quicken time after shipping into reverse, that tells the system, hey, we might need to start recording this data. So what you can see went into reverse, and then within a very short amount of time, accelerator pedal went above that 30%. That's what caused the T or the trigger in the TechStream data.
The row next to the 31.5 engine RPM data, can you explain to us what that is?
Sure, that's how many revolutions per minute the engine's turning.
The more gas, is it generally the higher the RPM?
Correct. There's going to be a little lag. You don't, your car doesn't move instantaneously. You have to step on the gas, then the RPMs go up, and then it starts going faster.
If you could explain to us the total distance and distance travel columns, how do you read that?
Sure. So we know the speed at various times. We know from this data that there is, you can see half a second between each one of these timestamps. So 10 data points at half a second. That's the 5 seconds of pre-crash data. So if you know you're going so many miles per hour, again, I converted it to feet per second. Feet per second, you're going so many feet per second for half a second, for example. You just multiply those two together and it tells you how far you went. So what I'm doing is looking at speed traveling during the interval. That's during this short time period. And then I add it all together here for total distance traveled.
You mentioned that when the data is captured, it's limited to 10 seconds. When we look at the top row of JBW vehicle speed MPH, it's 9.94. Is that 9.94 miles per hour?
It is.
Can we tell whether it was going faster or slower before this data?
We generally cannot. You might have some. It looks like it's slowing down. And then you see right here, this brake switch application. So you have two things relative to braking. You have a brake switch, which is simply whether the brake is on or off, just enough pressure to make the brake light come on. And then you have brake oil pressure, which gives you some idea of how much pressure is in the system, which is a rough indication for the braking. But then what you see here is the longitudinal acceleration or deceleration. This gives you some idea of how much the vehicle is speeding up or slowing down. So generally a minus sign is a slowing or accelerating in reverse.
And for the bottom of those columns, I'd ask you whether or not the beginning of the window, if you had any other information, is it the same situation for the end of that window that's captured?
Correct. So at the end of this window, you can see it's still going about 8.7 miles an hour when the trigger stopped. So after that trigger plus 5 seconds, the system said we no longer need to monitor it. Things have returned to an okay state. And so then it stops monitoring the system.
Based on your analysis and review and looking at this data, did you come to a conclusion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty whether or when this event occurred as it is portrayed in the data?
Yes, I did.
And could you share with the jury, to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty, when did this occur?
So this, you want time-wise or location or both?
Start with location, then time.
So it happened on Cedar Crest. It happened between cell phone data points 154 and 155. And it's a 3-point turn on Cedar Crest. And it occurred, according to the text stream data, about 12 minutes, 23 seconds after the vehicle was turned on. So,
and do you have an understanding of the variance between the Lexus clock and Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone?
Yes.
And what is that variance time?
21 to 29 seconds.
So the Lexus clock at 21, 23, 38. What time would that put Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to see counsel at sidebar for just a minute, please.
Oh, boy. Dad, Mom's mad.
So they go to sidebar, and surprise, I'll just kind of fill you in on what happens here. And you can watch or listen to the whole thing on the podcast channel, or we'll have the video up here on YouTube. Come back, and basically what we end up finding out is that she hit the accelerator at 74%, which...
That's a lot.
And it could possibly be higher, because the data, once it got to that point, and he explains it very well, but it didn't record anything to show further at that event, but she could have completely floored it, but you're at 74%. It's pretty... extreme, especially for going in reverse. Gets up to, I believe, and I may be off by a number or two here, like 24 to 27 miles an hour And the data, as it all adds up, very much shows his phone stops working within seconds of all of that, or the activity of it ends. It doesn't completely.
Can I
die.
Throw something in when yeah. I have when you're done?
Yeah. So it's like. It's pretty damning what he brings into this. And that's just the first part of the day.
I want to point something out. Now, granted, she's got a Lexus SUV. It's a four-wheel drive vehicle. It's large in profile. I'm coming at this with, I used to have a, I think it was a 2005 Mini Cooper. Those are very tiny little cars. They're almost like clown cars. They're not like the smart cars, but they're still tiny little tiny things.
Yeah.
And they're not good in the snow. Now, there have been times when we've gotten a foot of snow in Wisconsin, and I don't have this car anymore, but when I'd have to get to the radio station mm-hmm. and I'm coming out of the garage, I would have to floor it, like pedal to the metal, baby, in reverse, pop that thing in reverse, and just let her rip and see how far I could get. You know, get as much traction as I could in the garage on the bare floor and then, you know, pile over the foot of snow because this is a very low profile vehicle. There's hardly any clearance under a Mini Cooper.
This was not that.
And I remember I would have the pedal right to the floor
sure,
of the car.
But this is not that.
Yeah, this is not that.
At all.
So immediately I'm like, well, you know, there's like 2 feet of snow. So she's trying to get through it. But wait a minute.
No, there's not. There's no snow.
Not at this point.
It's a light flurry at this moment in time.
Yeah. Very different. So
it's a very different car.
It just depends on,
yeah,
on the timing. And she's got a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to do all of that to
yeah.
get through something like that.
No.
If she were driving a Mini Cooper, I could almost look at it and go, I could see her doing that.
No, she wasn't.
But not even at that point.
No, not even at that point. There'd be no reason whatsoever why you would floor mm-hmm. it. Because let's call it what it is. You're going at 74% and it could have possibly been higher on your accelerator as you're in reverse.
Sounds like a woman who's pissed.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
And pops it in reverse. Fuck you. I'm out of here.
Well, and knowing that he's behind you. And you knew
That's
he
really
was behind
scary.
You. You could be stupid and... forget that little fact because you had 9 drinks.
True.
But you still did it. And if you were that far into the wind, and that's not an excuse. That's, you did it. You should have known. And we're only relying on your word to say you didn't. So we're going to say you did. Because you
sure
probably
feels
did.
That way, doesn't it?
Because if you're just running to go home and you're not angry... why on earth would you accelerate that fast on a dark street late at night? I don't know, other than your experience there, and I get what you're saying for that Mini Cooper to get out of that specific situation, I can't think of any time I've ever just floored it in reverse, ever. I can't think of any reason why one would floor it in reverse unless you're trying to get away from something like a train tipping over next to you. And you're like, oh shit. Or something like that, where it's like life or death. You got to get out of the way here. Otherwise.
I had a car that was coming down a side street. I was at a stop sign
yeah.
and to my left, this car was coming way too fast. It was icy and it was going to be turning. And I could tell they
sure.
were coming to hit me and I had popped it into reverse and floored it.
Other than that,
unless, like I said, you're pissed off at your boyfriend, fuck you, I'm leaving, I'm getting out of here, screw you, you're a fucking pervert, John, remember all that.
Yeah.
Just, I'm out of here. And being a dumbass and not having awareness of your surroundings that he might be standing behind you, dumbass. Or somebody might be behind you. Why are you going almost 25 miles per hour in reverse?
She knows she did it. She knows she was ignorant at it. Again, I think it was just a stupid move. And I think she was angry. I don't think she was intending to kill him. I don't think it was even a thought of like, well, maybe I'll nick him. I don't think that was even a thought.
No.
I just think she was
drunk
an
stupidity.
Ignorant, drunk, narcissistic bitch that did it. Oh my God. I just ruined my, it's not, oh my God, is he okay? It's, oh my God, I just ruined my life.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And rather than get out and take accountability and get him the help that he could have survived possibly with if he had gotten it quick enough, she fled. Because me. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, and then she started telling recollection that she hit something.
And then she started telling herself stories and she started rationalizing it as people like this do. Mm-hmm. And well, there's a, I knew he slept with that woman over there and he'll get up. He'll get up. And if I don't hear from him, that's why she called him. Call, voicemail, hang up, call, voicemail, hang up, call, voicemail, hang up. That was the progression. It wasn't a, I mean, it was a panicked over and over and over and over and over because she wanted to make sure he was okay. That's why she was calling like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you say to another woman is, John's dead in the morning?
It's an odd thing to just conjure out of your brain.
I wonder if a snowplow could have
been. Unless you have an idea.
Well, I think she thought, oh, the snowplow story. I think the snowplow is a story. I mean, I know the snowplow did go by, but I think she was going to run with that and say, well, maybe he was drunk out there and just got hit by the snowplow. But then she has the broken taillight. And then there's more evidence that points at her. I think she was looking for an out.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, I dropped him off. That's why the first out was I'd left the waterfall and we were fighting, which I think is part of an out and also part of just gray or very brownout memory. So that didn't work because she gets called out on that right away. And then, well, how else could he have been injured out there other than me? A snowplow. Okay. Why would he be out there to get hit by a snowplow? They're like, what would, it's a weird one.
Yeah, why wasn't he in the house?
Was he just, because you're going to go like, well, he was just drunk out there and, you know, got hit by his, I don't know. But it's the only somewhat plausible thing one could think of when there's nothing else for an excuse. Because it doesn't make any sense at that moment to be like, oh, he goes into the house and all of his friends beat him up and drag him to the front yard. No, because that doesn't make logical sense at all.
Well, it does if you're trying to get out of.
No, it doesn't.
Well.
It doesn't make any logical sense.
In her brain.
In her brain, yes. But hers is not a healthy brain. And no one in their right mind could think that all of these people in this house would be in on doing something like that. It's just not, it wouldn't happen. All these different people going to ruin their life. And then somehow you get then of course the EMS and everybody else is going to be in on it too. Mm-hmm. And it's a story that got completely out of control and she didn't know how to control it. And she just started saying shit. And I think she thought that she had, I think for a while there, she thought she was going to go down more of an area, more of a road that it would have been an accident. But then all that all shifted. I mean, even her attorney said early on, and even if it was an accident, this was not malice. This was not. So clearly there have been
not
some
a murderer.
Yeah. That clearly was the angle, like horrible, horrible accident. And then till the mysterious man shows up and says, look at the people in the house. Then it became the spectacle that it is.
I wonder if that even happened.
I don't know. It's such a bullshit line, but who knows? I mean, what I was amused by with that was just how, I don't know. It was like storytelling. It was like a fantastical story. Not that you couldn't have had somebody come up and do it. Just the way he presented it was like something out of a fairy tale. It wasn't. And then local guy, you know, John Newman or whatever, you know, just like whatever, you know, he said, you know, think about this. All right. Or even if you just say his name, like he was a member of this, just something that like proves he's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
But
feels
he's like
the X-Files, like yes. They met in the parking garage with the guy, with the trench coat.
And so why would you suddenly think weird guy that comes and tells you, look at the people in the house, that he's credible in any shape or form, way, shape, or form. Like, where would that be? Oh, okay. I mean, people are going to come to you and say all sorts of weird things.
Mm-hmm.
Why would...
Yeah, this feels really weird.
Why would you go with that one? Because it's the only thing... Because, okay, well... I don't know. I don't even know how you would go with that one at the beginning. Because you don't know the Proctor problem quite yet.
Yeah.
But maybe it was like, well...
that's a happy accident.
I think it was... I don't know. I don't know how you craft that one together and try and make those dots and lines work, because they just don't. They do not work. You know, are there inconsistencies? Are there weird things here and there? Yes. But here's the deal. Take all of that out of the picture and the equation for just 1 second. I don't even care. I'll give you some tail light. Let's say they made it look worse and threw some down there, although I don't think they did. Take all of that out of here just for a second. Everything she said, the actual scientific evidence, the data, all show that she did it.
Yeah.
They show she did it. So all you can add over here is just nuance. So she did it. Look at me. Flying monkeys over here. Oh my gosh. Okay, that never does change this, though. It doesn't change the data that you did it. Now, if you start walking out of this data and you go, well, maybe the room could be that much bigger because, you know, what if they did plant tail light? What if they did? The data still shows she hit him.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was dead in the snow.
I don't care. I mean, at that this point, it's like, I don't care if they had like a notepad and a whole plan on how they were going to frame you. The data still shows you hit him. Like,
yeah.
They could be the most conniving, horrible human beings in the world. The data still shows you hit him. Like you could go, like, my God, these people were really plotting something horrible against her. Okay, but it still shows you hit him. Because none of that data shows your story over here. Shows your house story at all.
Yeah.
If you want to argue about the Sally Port or whatever, go for it. But again, it still shows you hit him. Your car is not making it up. Your car is not part of the conspiracy.
Right.
Neither is Apple's iPhone.
No.
So.
And what, 12 other people? No.
Yeah, and 12 other people and all the first, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like a list of like 70 people that would have to be in on this and putting all of their careers on the line if you're going to go down the road that all of this is a conspiracy. It yeah. just doesn't make sense. Could there be some shady work done on this? It was a shitty investigation. Yes. You can, all of that can be conclusive. Mm-hmm. All of that can work in the same road space together.
And it's all true. All of that's
true.
That it was a shitty, horrible investigation. And Michael Proctor, yeah. what a shitty, horrible professional who was yes. not professional.
But it data still shows she hit him.
Right. That should be the title of this episode. The data still shows that she hit him.
I don't, it's like at this point, I don't care what the fuck they said or even did over here. It doesn't yeah. matter. The data shows you hit him.
Yeah,
and that's
how do you
it.
Change that?
Like, you can have bad people over here doing bad things. The data still shows you hit them. They're unrelated.
Nobody was holding a gun to her head, forcing her to do what she allegedly did.
No.
She did it.
The data.
She was driving. She was behind the wheel. She said she was behind the wheel. There's evidence she was.
The data, her own words, the vehicle data shows you hit him. She says it. I mean, I know I said I hit him, but did I really say it that many times?
Yeah, you did.
And yeah, you did. And you sat there contemplating it for interviews until kingdom come, going, well, because I thought, I mean, what else could it possibly be? And then mm-hmm. the magical attorney came in and told me it couldn't have been my fault. It was this. And I said, we know who did it.
Yeah.
Because it couldn't be you, Karen, could it? Jesus.
She could have gotten away with this 20 years ago before cars had this kind of technology.
She could have gotten away with it if she just would have pled.
Yeah.
She's going to go away for a lot longer now. If she just pled it out as an accident and nobody dug this deep into this shit, you're at murder two now.
Yeah.
And I didn't think we were even going to get there.
Oof.
Let's take a look here. This is towards the end of his testimony today. Judson Welcher. This is where it gets a little interesting in terms of what is being revealed.
Knee will be in this general area. Right eyelid.
Photo as well?
I believe, yes, I did. That's the scuff that lines up with the approximate height of Mr. O'Keefe's right hip.
Oh, shit. I'm going to go back a little bit further.
Opponents.
And what slide is this? I think I just can't see it. What slide is this?
114.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One moment, Dr. Welcher. When you were showing us this video, you walked to the side of the passenger side of the car, didn't you?
I did.
And why did you do that?
I was discussing with them what to do.
You were discussing with who what to do?
The driver.
But in no way were you trying to imitate or give a demonstration of what you believed Mr. O'Keefe's movements to be?
Oh, no. This speed's just 2 miles an hour. I was having a discussion with the driver about what we needed to do to conduct the test.
So when you walked up to the passenger side, it wasn't to replicate a study or a movement or give an opinion?
No, that walking had nothing to do with this case except for me instructing the driver what to do.
Thank you for that clarification.
Sorry about that.
No apology necessary. Could you go back to the beginning when you were explaining this so we can go through it?
So this is the dynamic test, test two. So again, this is the view from behind.
That couldn't possibly have happened.
Just to avoid confusion, I will start it here.
At 24 miles an hour at 75% speed.
What speed is the car traveling?
You can see it. About 2 miles an hour.
Okay. Your Honor, that is the objection.
Okay. All right, so that's noted, Mr. Lacey.
And this guy is a similar build to John, too. So he's about the right size.
Image of the transfers onto my arm. Actually, the yellow paint.
There's the dog. There's Chloe, the jawless dog.
Yep.
Hand is here. This is from the arm and forearm. Here's the paint transfer pattern.
And that's slide.
I'm sorry. I'm terrible with that. That's slide okay. 116 now. That was 115.
Thank you.
This slide is pretty damning.
Done is I've taken these yellow lines to show the extension of the components on the rear of the exemplar Lexus. Then I've done this extension of those same components on the rear of Miss Reed's Lexus and shown how the approximate location of the fractures in the taillight match up with the approximate location of the contact of the arm onto the taillight.
Wow.
Dr. Welcher, do you have any indication of how Mr. O'Keefe's arm was bent, what angle it was bent at?
Not exactly, but for these to be taillight shard fragments, they would need to be in the area of the taillight, but it could be further up. We know from the police photographs that there was a damage to the rear body panel in the area I'm searching here. So it's possible his arm was a little higher up and the glass hit the rear of the Lexus and caused that damage.
In the bottom right.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Objection.
I will strike that last part about the glass.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The purpose of the circle is for what, Dr. Welcher?
To show, in this case, primarily the location of the lacerations up on the arm, the upper part of the arm, and that they match up with the locations of at least the one remaining shard in the rear taillight of Mystery's Lexus.
Looking at the picture of the Lexus, bottom right, middle, are there any marks on the Lexus itself that you took note of?
Yes, it's on the next slide.
Thank you.
Actually, it's two slides. So there, again, this is the evidence marker. There was a horizontal scuff. We know Mr. O'Keefe had blue jean-type pants on. There's a scuff in the area that would approximately correspond to hip level for Mr. O'Keefe. Yes, ma'am.
If you're listening to this, you really got to watch the video because it's stunning just how this matches up.
Did you describe what you saw on the bottom right-hand corner photo as well?
I believe, yes, I did. That's the scuff that lines up with the approximate height of Mr. O'Keefe's right hip. So then I included previous image that you've seen, slide 119, with the reconstructed photograph of the rear taillight showing where some of the fragments are. You can see where those fragments are relative to the curvature of the taillight. They'd be in the area somewhat centered within the region of the two yellow lines on slide 119.
Is there anything about the photograph in the top right-hand corner that's important? If so, could you zoom in and show us?
So again, it's showing that this is when it's, I believe, in the Sally Port at the police station, showing that scuff on the right rear body panel.
Did you see any similar scuffs in the middle back of the car?
Sustained.
Did you see anything notable as far as damage to the middle back of this Lexus?
The middle?
Yes.
Like back where the doors are?
Oh, with the middle of the back of the car, did you see any similar damage to the middle?
Scuff marks that ran along the bumper.
Okay, continue, please.
So this is just showing his jacket he was wearing, that the puncture marks coincide to the marks on his arm. This is from the autopsy report. A couple things it notes: a half centimeter abrasion on his right lateral knee. He's got a laceration on his right eyelid that corresponds to the height of that rear wind wing on the back of the Lexus.
Sustained.
Thank you.
How tall was Mr. O'Keefe?
73 inches tall, 6'1".
And how high was that wing from the ground on the back of the Lexus?
It was about 5 feet, 11 inches, maybe 5 feet, 10 and a half.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you notice anything about Mr. O'Keefe's right knee?
I noticed there was a half centimeter abrasion on the right lateral knee.
Did you note how high from his foot that bruise was on his knee?
We don't know the exact length of his knee. The abrasion appears to be right here at knee level. If you go back and look at where my knee is, that would be at the proximate level of the bumper.
Could you focus in on the bumper to show it relative to the height of your knee?
Sure. Oops. So my knee is approximately right here. This is where the bumper is. So the side of Mr. O'Keefe's knee will be in this general area.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sir, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty?
Here we go.
About the lacerations on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm and forearm regarding its orientation relative to the broken taillight on the defendant's Lexus.
Yes. Your Honor, may I read my report, my opinion? Okay. The location orientation of the laceration on John O'Keefe's right forearm and arm are consistent with the geometry and orientation of the right taillight of the Reed 2021 Lexus LX 570.
There you go.
After considering these three different subjects that we discussed, the text stream data, analyzing the touching between the defendant's Lexus and Mr. O'Keefe's car, and then your demonstrations regarding the injury to Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, did you consider further evidence in reaching any conclusions as an accident reconstructionist and a biomechanical engineer?
Yes, I did.
Could you turn us to slide 124, please?
So this is some of the location of the physical evidence. Red plastic, clear plastic. His point of rest was indicated to be 7 feet off the roadway. There was a sneaker that was found near the curb. There were various fragments of taillight found in the snow on the morning of the incident, as to the afternoon of the incident.
Could you zoom in on those photos so that we can see the dates?
The date?
Yes.
Oh, sure. January 29th at 5:46 p.m. This one's at 5:52. One's at 5:59. This one down here is at 5:46. So there were various fragments of the taillight that were ultimately pieced back together and determined to be from Ms. Reed's right rear taillight. Additional evidence was found. This is taken on the afternoon of the accident, again, around 5:50 p.m.
Could you zoom in, please, for us?
Sure. So what you see here is what was later identified as Mr. O'Keefe's right shoe.
This slide number, Dr. Welcher?
Yes, ma'am, 127.
Could you show us the time and date, please?
January 29th at 5:50 p.m. So a series of photographs. Again, you can see on the right-hand photograph that this is the roadway. This is the curb. The grass will be up towards the top of the right image on slide 127. The shoe is found, you know, up against, in the roadway, up against the edge of the curb. Baseball hat, again, acquired a same baseball hat. Baseball hat was also found in the snow. You can see.
I want you, before you move ahead, the baseball hat, could you give us a close-up view and also the date and time?
So that's where it's buried in the snow. These were taken on February 3rd. I'm not sure what time it was. There was also red liquid identified, I believe they indicated to be blood, in the snow as well.
And could you give it?
So, I'm going to sustain that objection and strike the last part of it.
I understand.
So we don't need to come to sidebar, right?
Just describe the color of what you saw rather than what it was.
There was red coloration in the snow.
And could you give us that date if it's different than February 3rd?
I thought that was February 3rd as well.
Is there a date on the photographs to the left?
I don't see one.
Okay.
It's really eerie looking at his footprints.
By the Canton Police Department?
Yeah.
Do you know when exactly those photos were taken?
I don't, except I have them dated as February 3rd. But I think that may just be the baseball hat photos.
Okay, can you continue?
Then we have photos of a broken glass. Surrounded by red marks in the snow.
Continue, please.
This, by the way, is the flagpole.
And that slide number, please, Dr.
Yes, ma'am, 129. Thank you. Slide 130.
Can you enlarge that and explain to us what that is?
Sure. So at the bottom, it indicates where it's from. So this was from a presentation I gave looking at pedestrian injury biomechanics back in 2005. And what it's showing is where various, or what are the most common injuries and pedestrian impacts. So what it shows is head injuries are the most common injury in pedestrian impacts. So on the right-hand side, it's all injuries. You can see of all the individual study, the highest prevalence or highest or most common injury was head injuries. And those that sustained severe life-threatening injuries, again, the highest was also head injuries. So head injuries are very commonly associated with pedestrian impacts. This is anatomical drawings just to help you understand the anatomy. The middle section here is from Mr. O'Keefe's autopsy report. The lower right diagram, the green line represents the fracture lines, predominantly here, at least in the base of the skull. So in the biomechanical and forensics, and forensics just means the legal related scientific industry, there's something called hat brim line or hat line analysis. And what it is it's looking at where the hat line you can imagine is where the brim of a hat would be. And what it is, it's literature that's looking at where head injuries from falls commonly occur.
I'm going to strike. Strike. Yes. Yes. So that was slide 131.
No, that was 132. I've moved it because you said to take it out of the screen.
I have one more question to the jury.
So, jurors, when I strike something, that means don't.
Continue, Dr. Welcher.
Your Honor, I need to go past that slide.
Okay, go ahead, go past
slide. This is the next slide.
Okay, if you can continue.
Sure. So I provided peer-reviewed scientific literature that looked at a metric where they were publishing research trying to delineate falls versus blows or assaults. And so this metric is in that scientific literature. They looked at a total of 400 different events, 235 falls, 165 assaults. And so you can see where it says mandible. So mandible is your lower jaw.
Can you enlarge that a little bit, please?
Your Honor, pardon the interruption.
Yeah, let's take that slide down and I'm going to see you at sidebar, please.
They're having a sidebar.
They have a lot of sidebars.
You see Peggy O'Keefe, John's mom, is kind of looking down at the floor. I mean, just
that'd be such a hard thing for them to go through.
Just what a brazen circus this whole thing is, and what it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
All because one woman didn't want to take accountability, allegedly.
It's really painful.
And that's what makes this sick. That's what makes it monstrous. This is why it's not just she hit him and didn't take accountability. She hit him and like went after all these people, saying that they were the murderers.
Yeah.
And had her band of flying monkeys go out and terrorize these people. Even though it wasn't like it was completely in her head at the beginning, like, no, there's no way in hell. That's completely impossible. I would never even think I hit him. That's the only thing she's thinking of, is that she hit him. And then she talks about it forever. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, if you look at the data and you look at the science, it's highly probable that you hit him.
Yeah, it didn't have to be this way.
Now, if you want to look at the cops and some of the weird, shady things that went on there, like getting rid of the cell phones and all that sort of stuff, I don't know what that's all about. But again, it doesn't disprove that Karen hit him. Like, right. That's still
there. It just
there.
Proves that there's some ugly, weird shit going on that got uncovered by this ugly situation.
I would be wondering what else. I don't even know that it relates to this case, but I mean, look at the Sandra Birchmore case over there. There's some shady things that happened there, and there was some spillover of officers in that case. This seems to be a culture problem that they have going on of some way, shape, or form. But the FBI did go in and did investigate, and they also came out saying that it was a sloppy investigation, basically, but that there was no collusion or some sort of a conspiracy to go after Karen Reed. But, I mean, some of those pieces of evidence, you know, they're just gone. But I would be more curious and more thinking that maybe some of these people had things on their phones that had nothing to do with Karen Reed that if found out wouldn't be such a good thing. And they knew that there was going to be an inspection coming soon.
Mr. Lessie, Mr. Brennan is going to do this in open court. Just talk to Dr. Welcher for a minute. Okay. Yes. Is there any objection?
Objection would be, on the transcript.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Okay, wait a minute.
Sorry. Dr. Welcher, on the headings, the Lexus and John.
Going yes. Over something here.
Absolutely.
No talking, court still in session.
You got both attorneys from both sides standing up there by the witness.
So it starts on page 124?
I think they're trying to figure out what slide they're going to go to.
Dr. Welcher, is that where it starts?
That appears to be, Your Honor, yes. 124.
I don't know how you walk any of this back other than just saying that this guy's in on
it
too.
On 123.
Yeah.
123 is a blank slide.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I have 123 is a blank slide.
Okay. So 124.
Triple M.
/124 through /138, is that accurate, counsel? Chrissy, do you need a break? Do you need 5 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So if you could do that for us.
Absolutely,
Your Honor. Dr. Welcher.
I'm doing it right now.
We can bring the jurors back.
132 or 133?
133. Okay, here we go.
So we did skip over 132.
We skipped over that one as well.
This is going to be the moment that you're about to hear that kind of seals the deal.
Sure.
Yeah, this might be the pivotal point in the case where you can hear the coffin shutting.
Correct.
Explain that.
Sure. So there's, I gave three papers and someone's dissertation on this issue. They are creating a analysis methodology to differentiate whether the nature and pattern of injuries are more consistent with a fall or more consistent with an assault, or they're calling it blows.
Okay, could you walk us through what this chart means?
Sure. So this is their flow chart in terms of their assessment. So it starts at the very top. You can see they analyze a total of 400 events, 235 falls, 165 blows or assaults. So what you do is you ask yourself on the first set of arrows, you look at the mandible, the jaw. And MRS, as you can see at the bottom down here, refers to a simple fracture or multiple fractures. A is no fracture. Mr. O'Keefe has no mandible fracture. So that means we go down this row. It then looks at all facial fractures. So these are the bones that constitute the face. So if you have a facial fracture, you go to your left. If you have no facial fracture, you go to the right. So if you have some event, no mandible fracture, no facial fracture, what they've indicated, that is predominantly associated with falls and not assaults.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In addition, did you do any further study on the force of a person falling back and landing on their head?
Oops, I did.
Could you?
So what I did was I did what are called drop tests. I took an anthropomorphic test device, ATD, which is just a fancy name for a crash test dummy, and dropped it backwards onto a hard surface to look at what happens if you were to, say, fall backwards and hit your head onto a hard surface. So on this particular photograph of Mr. O'Keefe in the upper left, there's noted to be abrasions above the fracture line in the area. You can't see that at all. You can see. Noted to be abrasions right here. Your Honor, I brought a hat. That was the one I used in my testing. May I put it on and demonstrate something?
Mr. Lessie?
Yeah. If you would like a sidebar or I can.
Are you objecting?
I am objecting.
That's sustained. No, you can't put it on.
Okay. So, I will show you the dummy test I did. Watch when the shoulders hit the ground, then the head hits the ground. It creates kind of an arc path that will drag and slide objects up the head. So if you have something such as a baseball hat, it'll cause it to drag across the scalp, dragging it up to a similar location to where these abrasions are. So here's the testing. Again, this is a crash test dummies you see on television. This is myself. Me giving me similar instructions, telling them what we're going to do. I said, and watch. Shoulders come in, then the head contacts the ground. What you see is if you fall backwards and land on a very hard surface or hard surface, you'll get extremely high loads on the head. If you compare that to data in the science...
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
That, please explain what the chart is before you explain it.
Oh, sure. This chart up here?
Nope, the next page.
Right.
If
in mind to tell us what it is before you get into the details?
Absolutely. So this is actually kind of a famous study that was published, one of the first studies looking at head fracture or skull fracture tolerances. So what you see, the portion at the back of your skull is called the occiput bone. So that bone, if you put your hand on the back of your head, is your occiput. So we're looking at occiput impacts. And what you can see is that when they took cadaver skulls and dropped them from as low as 40 inches onto a hard surface, they were getting linear fractures. And you can see even at 40 inches, it was called a stellate fracture. Stellate means star-like. You get a fracture that goes out like a star. So even at a 40-inch drop height, you have sufficient force when landing on a hard surface to cause skull fracture and a level 3 type skull fracture. So Mr. O'Keefe, again, is 73 inches tall. His occiput is about 4.6 inches down from the top of his skull. That means it would fall a total of about 73 minus 5 would be 68. So just under 6 feet. So 72, 4 inches under, so 5 foot, 8 inches is the fall height. What is data showing that even at a fall height as low as 40 inches onto a hard surface, you can get fairly severe skull fractures.
Thank you. Dr. Welcher, in regard to your third part of your analysis, did you come to a conclusion with a reasonable degree of engineering certainty?
Here we go.
Whether or not the defendant's Lexus collided with Mr. John O'Keefe on the evening of January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.
Yes.
Before you give me your opinion, I'd like you to share with the jury what that opinion is based on.
Sure. So it's based on the 130 slides you've seen, based on my personal inspection of the Lexus, the correlation of the text stream data with the infotainment data, as well as Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone data. It's looking at, I guess, where the taillight wasn't broken. It's looking at the physical evidence at the scene in terms of taillight fragments, glass fragments, red color in the snow. We have the cell phone data, the location and position of the arm lacerations, the air temperature at the time indicative of sufficient to freeze, the location of the fracture on the back of his head relative to the scientific literature, my testing of forces available falling onto a hard surface, published science on the fracture forces associated with falls. I'm sorry, I'm reading from my report. I'm reading from my report.
Can you answer without reading from your report?
Probably. It's more complete if I read my report.
Your objection, Mr. Lessa?
I do. On this question, Your Honor, reading from a report with this question. So I'm here to bring in some data.
So, try not to read. Don't read from your report.
Okay, nope.
Okay, Dr. Welcher, let me ask you again. Based on your analysis, data available, reviews, study, based on the fact that you are an accident reconstructionist and a biomedical engineer, have you reached an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty whether the defendant's Lexus struck Mr. John O'Keefe on January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.
Yes.
And could you share the basis of your opinion before I ask you your ultimate opinion?
Sure. So again, you've seen my slide presentation. I've inspected the Lexus. I've looked at where it wasn't damaged. I've inspected the taillight. I got an exemplar Lexus. I ran lower speed contacts to verify that the injury pattern and location on the arm is consistent with the height and orientation of the taillight. I have looked at fracture tolerance data for falling backwards onto hard surfaces. I've looked at the metrics of where his injuries were and what injuries he didn't sustain. I've looked at the cell phone data, and then I've looked at Ms. Reed's interviews as well.
Based on all the evidence you considered, could you share with the jury what your opinion is to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty about whether the defendant's Lexus struck Mr. O'Keefe on January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.?
Buckle up.
I can answer.
Yes, based on the totality of the evidence, DNA, everything I've talked about, that is consistent with that happening. With a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, that is what happened.
Objection. Boom!
So I'm going to strike that. I want to see counsel outside off in just a
minute. Did you feel the door shut right there? I did. I felt the breeze. Ouch.
There's Karen.
She's like, oh, shit.
Being called up to the teacher's desk.
I was going to say, getting called to the principal's office. They figured out what I did. Damn it. If it wasn't for those nasty kids, I might have gotten away with it. That's for you Gen Xers out there.
All somebody else. It's somebody else's fault. Somebody else did this to me.
Yeah. Ugh.
I don't know how you come back from this one. I mean, other than just saying, he's a liar. I mean, the guy has the credentials. He did the tests. He did all the data. He downloaded all. It wasn't, he didn't touch anything. I mean, there wasn't the involvement of the local cops in any way, shape, or form in terms of his investigation.
No.
Again, I'll give you the taillight data if you want to say that. I didn't even, but I believe it's exactly how this happened and explains how that taillight shattered the way it did. I don't think there's really a lot of question to that. And again, I don't care what they did over here at this point because it still shows she did it. Bad investigation. Yeah. But guess what? Technology came and saved that bad investigation and gave us the reality of what took place. There is no more wondering what happened to John O'Keefe, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like we know. We've got the answer. You know, it's like a really bad algebra problem. If this car is traveling at this distance and this speed, we've got the answer. We know what time the train pulls into the station.
Yeah.
You know, all the other stuff. And it's like, seriously, like an algebra problem. All the other details about, the lady with red hair, it doesn't matter. We have the absolute details that tell us exactly what we need to know. All the other stuff you can throw out. It's this piece that solves the equation.
Yeah.
I hate algebra.
And I'm not saying anything good is that this investigation was good. I'm just saying it doesn't even matter at this point.
No, it doesn't, does it?
I mean, good, bad, ugly. I mean, the job is here is to create reasonable doubt. And we still got to hear about the Proctor problem and all that. And the icky things he said about Karen Reed and just grotesque things as well. Again. Yep. It still doesn't show that she didn't hit him because this shows that she hit him and you can't take that away.
Well, I don't know how they're going to refute any of this because this is science. So are we going to get into this discussion about what science isn't real?
Well, you're going to have their other experts that are going to come in and they're going to try and do their story of it too. I mean, this is how it works. But I don't know that it's going to be any much stronger than this.
It's going to be hard.
And you can't refute the data. That's the thing. It's the data is not lying. The data is there. I mean, like I've been saying too, I mean, even if they're going to argue about, the timestamp was adjusted and then like, look, we understand why it was, at least the reasonable folks in the room do, just to make sure it's accurate. And I'm sorry, it doesn't line up with what the FKR folks want. It's sorry. Gotta be right with it. And even if it weren't, let's even just say it weren't, we're still literally talking about seconds here of difference in a time window where
John was struck. If you were just to go, well, it's like within seconds, maybe the clocks are off a bit. Yeah, that's exactly what they've been saying since the last case. But now they've been able to adjust it. So it is right there in the second-to-second match. And honest to God, not that that 30-some seconds would have made much of a difference. It wasn't 30 seconds that she peeled out of there and then John was struck in the front yard by the angry Alberts running out and taking him down right there as he's casually walking in.
Oh, and don't forget a dog involved, too.
And then the dog.
Don't forget the dog.
The jawless dog. Where that doesn't have DNA.
Yeah. Magic dog.
And there's no DNA found on John O'Keefe after he, from the dog. Like, if you're mauled by a dog, you'd have some DNA on you, whether it be fur, whether it be
saliva.
The saliva.
I worked around dogs. They drool. They have hair. The teeth puncturing. You're going to get DNA everywhere.
Yeah. And there was
how that works. Just a lot, isn't it?
I don't believe she's factually innocent anymore. I don't think there's anything that can prove that. All you can do now is just say, I know you are, but what am I?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's there. She hit him. And
I wonder what the jurors are thinking right now.
Like, there's a bunch of shitty people over here, or maybe some are, or I don't, whatever your opinion is on all of that. It doesn't change the facts.
Nope.
And it doesn't give her a get out of jail free card. Because Proctor said a bunch of horrible things. And laughed.
Which he did. He absolutely did.
He did, but it doesn't matter because she still did it.
Yeah. There's still a crime
it
that
doesn't,
took place.
You don't get, well, this investigator called you a cunt. Guess what? You hit him and you don't have to go to jail. Like, no, that's not how that works.
No, that's not our judicial system. And again, not saying she's a murderer, but it looks like she killed her boyfriend by accident and didn't do anything about it.
She's not a murderer. She turned into a terrorist.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
I mean, what happened here? I mean, if you're to believe or connect the things where her and Aiden, as she said, talked forever and that she had nothing to do with the intimidation of those people and the witness and the harassment and all of that. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, or she aligned with a terrorist organization. I mean, allegedly, and I'm just saying, you know, the acts that were done after all of this, when she knew damn well that she very, very likely struck him and was just completely inept to do anything and comfortable to watch all these people be harassed left and right.
Yeah. It's incredibly unfortunate.
Because somebody called you a bad name? So we're going to go after all the family and all these people that have nothing to do with... I mean, come on. This is... Yeah.
These people are never going to get their lives back. They're going to have nightmares. They've been through hell. That night was hell. And now they've been through more hell.
I think she should be charged with more.
I was going to bring that up. Do you think somebody's going to come after her?
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, pain and discomfort.
All of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. These families are going to sue the shit out of her.
Yeah, they're not done with her. She is not done with a courtroom when this is over.
They're waiting for this to end.
Yep.
And they're hoping that it's going to be a guilty verdict because that's going to make the civil one that much easier.
Yeah. It just didn't need to go this far. She could have said, I made a horrible mistake that night.
Yeah.
My judgment was horrible. I did a bad thing. I was drunk. I shouldn't have been. I'm sorry. How easy would that be to say, I'm sorry. I fucked up.
Those same cautions, please do not.
Judge is dismissing the jury right now, and then we're going to watch about 5 minutes or so, because it's all that's left of some
arguments without the jurors present. And
oh, I'm sorry. We're starting an hour late tomorrow. Is that what this is?
Yes.
I get to sleep in.
We'll start at 10 o'clock tomorrow. We'll see you at 10 o'clock. The court officers will tell you about your specific directions.
And the thing is, this data doesn't go away. If for some reason it's a hung jury, guess what comes back for the next one?
Will there be another one if there's a hung jury?
Yeah, very likely. I mean, especially with this convictable of data.
Ace.
It's okay. I mean, I came in early this morning and set up.
I don't think they give her a pass at this point.
I don't feel like it's going to be a hung jury.
I don't either.
I think the prosecution has really made a decent case this time, and I feel like the defense is just kind of, eh.
They're weak.
Eh. Yeah.
Did Dr. Welcher leave?
Dr. Welcher can step down. I know he has to come back and have his equipment.
So just leave everything here.
And then you'll come back in 5 minutes.
Roger.
All right. Aye. Yes, please. All right, so Mr. Alessi, I will hear you as to your objection.
This sucks, Your Honor.
It's not fair. They know all that fancy math information and stuff.
Your parents have more money than we do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Would you like me to go to the podium or stand?
Right there is fine, and let's try and wrap this all up by four because I've already heard you at sidebar.
We'll do so, Your Honor.
That means both of you I'll hear from within the next 5 minutes. Go ahead, Mr. Alessi.
Thank you, Your Honor. The point number one is the question of whether, based on a reasonable degree of scientific variance or certainty, he has an opinion whether a collision occurred. I'm going to give a dramatic and accurate example that happens in courts over the time of the equivalent. So, by analogy, if the issue is whether or not a defendant has stabbed an individual and cause a certain death. That is the ultimate question for the jury. That question is never permissible in a trial. By analogy, this is the exact analogous situation. The question of whether there was a collision is the ultimate question for the jury. That is why we are having this trial. The defense strongly asserts there was no collision, and there is substantial evidence to that. We are going to cross-examine Dr. Welcher. We are going to put in our own strong case to demonstrate no collision occurred. That's no surprise. It was in our opening statement.
Good luck with that.
This witness cannot, by precedent for years, opined on the ultimate question that is going to the jury. I accept, subject to evidentiary issues, the two questions that a biomechanist always answers in these situations. Is the damage to the vehicle consistent with a pedestrian hitting the vehicle? And are the injuries to the individual consistent with being hit by a motor vehicle? Those are the questions that are permissible, not the collision question. It is resoundingly improper in this trial, in any trial where that is the ultimate conclusion for the jury. Yes, an expert can offer opinions, but every expert is bounded by the extent of their opinion, and that opinion on whether there was a collision would invade the province of the jury and the whole purpose why we are here, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Brennan.
So what Mr. Alessi is arguing is that in their opening statement, they repeatedly invaded the province of the jury because they must have asserted vehemently over and over again, there was no collision. Over and over and over again. And he just told you that when his expert takes the stand, they'll have abundant evidence that there was no collision. This case is about the collision, but that is not the ultimate issue. The ultimate issue is manslaughter or mens rea for second degree murder, not collision. They don't get to define the prosecution's case. They do not get to define or limit the prosecution's opinions. They have no case law. They have no study. They have no jurisdiction or jurisprudence to say what we are limited to. He's entitled to an opinion. His opinion is not limited to whether or not the defendant struck Mr. O'Keefe. That evidence is obvious. It's not whether or not there's damage to the car or Lexus. That evidence is obvious. He also is an enormous part of a biomedical engineer and an accident reconstructionist. He studied the text stream data. They didn't. He did. And he's entitled to give an opinion. The text stream data, based on fact and science and data, tells us when, if you put it together with other evidence, and where, when you contribute it with other evidence, this collision actually occurred. We don't have to play peekaboo and close our eyes to the reality of the fact that the evidence supports the conclusion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty that the defendant struck Mr. O'Keefe with her Lexus in front of Fairview Road. I am not interjecting the defendant. I always refer to her car, so it is sanitized, her Lexus. I've been careful about that. I don't have to, but I'm very careful about it. He is relying on the text stream data, the physical evidence, his independent studies. He is allowed to offer an opinion about whether the injuries are consistent with the damage to the car, whether the damage to the car is consistent with the injury to Mr. O'Keefe. And he's also allowed to answer, in his opinion, the issue of a collision, putting aside the fact that that was emphasized and repeated in the opening statement, and it's going to happen again when other people testify. It's not our fault that ARCA didn't testify or look into the text stream data or they don't have an expert for it. It doesn't belittle or limit that evidence. We expect to ask Dr. Welcher, does he have an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty whether the defendant's Lexus collided with Mr. O'Keefe on January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.? That is one of the opinions we're going to ask him. Nothing to do with the ultimate opinion of guilt or innocence or whether it's manslaughter or there's mens rea for second-degree murder.
And what was your second? You said that's one of the opinions you're going to ask him. What else are you looking at?
I will also ask him about the consistent with, whether the injuries are consistent with.
With what?
I'm going to ask him after this part about the difference between a clip or a sideswipe as opposed to a full-on injury, pedestrian collision from a front or back of a bumper, and there are further slides to emphasize that point. And so there'll be an opinion regarding that as well.
And you
consistency with a side swipe or a clip.
Okay, so this is not the end of Dr. Welch's testimony. He's just moving on to another area.
It's close, but it's not the end.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Your Honor, here's a case. Attorney Brennan said, go to case. Oh, here it is. Commonwealth v. Coleman, 366 Mass. 705. And it stands as a proposition exactly that I articulated. I won't repeat it. Secondly, Your Honor, we practice what we preach. I have the ARCA report right in front of me. And I have the report.
Is that a new one or is that a...
This is the new one.
Okay.
And it's also the old one is the same. So I can... Either one is the same. They do not... Mr. Brennan incorrectly said what our experts are going to do. I don't know why he did that because he has these in writing. Neither Dr. Wolf or Dr. Rentschler talk about a collision, a conclusion. It's consistency. It's those two questions I said at sidebar. And I, for reference, Your Honor, for the most recent, is page 15. There is... No.
I don't have that report, so I'd like a copy of that report.
Your Honor, a copy, and I also, Your Honor, refer Your Honor to ARCA's existing report, which I'm going to do from memory. I think it's February of 2024 that was done for the U.S. Department of Justice and FBI, where they basically said and gave opinions on those two items I spoke to you at sidebar. So Attorney Brennan is incorrect when he says what our experts are going to say or not. We've already committed in writing to what they're going to say. We're consistent. We practice what we preach.
All right. So we will discuss this tomorrow before we start. I'll tell you my ruling tomorrow before we start. I need to go back and see what exactly came in to evidence today. All right. So I'll see you in the morning.
There you go.
That's a wrap.
The day that changed everything for Karen Reed.
It doesn't feel good for her. You know, in a couple of weeks, we might be going, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But right now, at this very second, if we were to decide, if we were the jurors, I would walk back in that room, grab my Subway sub, sit down and go, guilty.
I don't think there's anything that can, there's nothing that can change it for me. There's nothing that can change it. Other than if you were to say somehow this expert who has nothing to do with anything is somehow involved in the conspiracy. So go find the connection where he's part of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
And you let me know. Okay. Because it's just not there. And the data shows what it shows. She chose, she hit him. Again, I think like he was saying, it's not answering whether it was done, you know, manslaughter or if it was second degree murder. It's just showing what happened. And so that completely throws out the whole conspiracy dog bite fight in the house. That doesn't exist anymore.
You know, I thought that that was always kind of weird in general. Like
it was.
A dog's not going to do that kind of damage. Why would his colleagues beat him up and kill him or leave him for dead? I mean, just
the whole
it
thing
all,
is absurd.
It just, yeah, every part of this was just like, wait, what? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of it. It's all absurd.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it feels that way.
It's just Karen led people down this path. Her attorneys led people down this path. And there's enough people who would rather live in a world where Karen Reed's the world don't exist.
Yeah.
Guess what, Buttercup? They're everywhere. And they do this sort of shit on small, on much smaller levels all the time.
Yep.
That you have
you
no
work
idea
with them,
about.
You date them, you marry them, you divorce them, you quit jobs because of them. It's a whole thing.
Everywhere you want to be, like Visa.
Right.
So, sorry, they're out there. We follow a playbook, and she has been doing it quite remarkably. She get the gold star, I think, for following it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what Judge Bev says tomorrow.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.